Daria Brzezinski. And this morning we'd like to welcome you and our guest from Southern Tioga School District. We have today Dr. Boyanowski. Dr. Ronald, is it?
Yes, it is.
Boyanowski. He's the superintendent of the Southern Tioga School District. And Dr. Boyanowski, good morning and good welcome.
Well, good morning, and how are you this morning?
I'm terrific. Now, where is Southern Tioga School District for those people who don't know in our listening audience?
Southern Tioga School District is in Tioga County, which is in north central Pennsylvania. We're on the New York state border. We're just south of Elmira and Corning, New York. We're one of three school districts in Tioga County, which is the second largest county in the state. Our district is 50 miles long and 30 miles wide. We have 486 square miles and 2,500 students, three high schools and three elementary schools.
And is there any college or university that's near you?
We have, in the northern part of our district is the home of Mansfield University, one of the state colleges within the state college system. Another part of our district is Blossburg, which is a former coal mining town, and Liberty, which is the southernmost part of our district, which is in Tioga and also part of Lycoming County, is a rural and farming area with parts of it a bedroom community for Williamsport.
So it sounds like you are mostly rural, what we would call rural community.
We are rural. Tioga County has a population of 40,000 and probably about three times that many deer. described our area as the last frontier going west.
Aha. Well, it certainly is beautiful.
Yes, it is. We're the home of the Pennsylvania Grand Canyon.
And oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes.
Aha. Where is that located?
That's located in Wellsboro.
Aha.
And it is a very popular tourist attraction.
I'll have to go there next time I come.
Yes, and also we're about 25 miles, 28 miles from Elmira, New York, which was the summer home of Mark Twain.
Yes. Now, Dr. Boyanowski, even though people have in their mind a perception of rural school districts, and I must tell them from my experience with having met you that you are anything but backward and behind the times. You are a very progressive thinker and a very insightful and very much up on all the latest research. And I'd like you to talk about where do you think that education, how do we need to restructure in terms of the system to provide better education for our children? There's been much debate about whether or not our children are meeting the needs of careers and the business community. Where do you think we need to go?
Well, probably we need to look back historically, maybe at the era of James Conant, when he mentioned that every class should be at least 100 students and a school should be a particular size to offer a comprehensive curriculum.
You don't mean every classroom. You mean every class itself, like fifth
class,
grade, sixth grade.
Right. Every class, not every room of students. For instance, every grade, maybe I should say.
Right, correct.
Every grade should be 100. And therefore, you can offer a multiple of classes, and you can schedule better. You can offer several physics classes, several chemistry classes, and so on. But I think what has happened is that was taken out of context, and with the movement of that there were 3,200 school districts in the state in the late 40s and early 50s, and with that move toward consolidation, we have 501 school districts in Pennsylvania now. And in that process, some of our school districts have become very, very large, and with bigness comes problems. Now, I say this with the idea in mind that the discussion among those doing research today is that we need to decrease the size of our schools.
That's correct.
And we know that Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, which are certainly quality cities within Pennsylvania, and we recognize their history and their contributions to education, but they have become unwieldy school districts that have become too difficult to supervise and provide the educational opportunities for children that they should. For instance, if you would compare our school district, which actually at one time before this move towards consolidation was three separate communities of Mansfield, Blossburg, and Liberty. Two of our high schools in Blossburg and Liberty have a size of 300 students. Mansfield, about 600 students. Two of our elementary schools in Blossburg and Liberty are 300, and Mansfield about 600. And with that size school, and if you look a little bit at look at some of the research maybe from Roland Barth, who has a publication called Run School Run about middle schools and what is an ideal size school. He talks about a school of 300 in which there is still that education ethic, there is community, there is relationship between students and faculty, and I believe that's what makes education go.
I concur. We seem to have found within our research that the schools that are, that is the magic number, 300, in terms of their success, and it seems to not differentiate whether or not it has an infrastructure that's a school within a school or a voucher school or a charter school, but rather the size of the school and the size of the classroom are directly related to how the community supports the school.
Without question. One nice thing about rural schools that in my observation is that education ethic that I spoke about still exists, and there is great community support where parents come to community events and athletic events and volunteer to be involved in the schools, and there's that total commitment to the education of the child. And also everyone is watching children in our communities to assure that they are getting a good education and also that they're attending school. A couple examples. For instance, our graduation rate or our dropout rate, let's go in that direction, is less than 1%.
Wow.
We have been recognized by
wow.
the state of Pennsylvania monetarily with awards for our small dropout rate. Our average daily attendance at the elementary school is about 97%.
Wow.
High schools, it's 95%. And everyone.
What do you attribute that to?
Pardon me?
What do you attribute that to?
Well, I kid sometimes and I say it's our excellent lunch program. I believe that our schools are a very nice place to be. Children are very comfortable. If you walk through our schools, they're clean. There's a good relationship between staff and students. And even the custodians you'll see are involved in supporting the education of our children more directly than they might be in a larger school. I was involved in a large school district back in the 60s in suburban Philadelphia. And our high school had 3,200. I was a teacher at that time, and in grades 10, 11, and 12. Well, not only did you not know all the students, you did not know the teachers, and maybe you knew your grade level principal, and there was just not that community and that support that exists in a rural area.
So there's a lot of, do you think that, I personally did a study on the shooters for the since 1997 in schools, and I found one of the common denominators was the fact that they were from schools that had at least 1,000 students and or more, some of them 2,000 and 3,000.
Right.
So The idea that we need to get back to these rural schools is a wonderful, the smaller schools is a wonderful one. How do you propose that we do that with, how do we do that with school districts that have 2,000 school district students in a building and have these large buildings?
Well, we can go in the direction of fiscal management and the difficulty of reversing what we have committed ourselves to. Right, there are monuments of education that have been constructed in suburban areas and urban areas, and a great deal of public money has been committed to these buildings, and we just can't leave those buildings. But I believe what education has done, and I'm sure that you've read about schools within a schools or attempting to decentralize within that facility itself, it still becomes very, very difficult, no matter how you look at it. For instance, the high school that I mentioned in suburban Philadelphia, in which I worked back in the 60s, think about it. You're bringing in 3,200 students via buses, which brings about transportation difficulties and congestion, and all of those people coming into the schools in the morning and leaving at night is a problem in itself. If you take a community that has a celebration and they have 3,200 students come or people coming in for that celebration, they'll have the fire department out, they'll have the police department, they'll have all kind of auxiliary policemen to support the activity.
That's a wonderful analogy.
And so as a result, the bigness in itself causes those difficulties. But some of the other things that, for instance, you mentioned to me, what have we done that might be interesting to support education most recently? We have gone to intensified scheduling, which is called block scheduling in some areas, which rather than going with the traditional industrial schedule that was developed at the turn of the century, by the barons of industry who sat on boards of education. And if you think about it, whether it was the Carnegies or Rockefellers or...
It was Carnegie. That's why we call them the Carnegie units.
Absolutely, for graduation. Education being reactive rather than proactive, we took what was successful at that time. And the assembly line was developed by Henry Ford and Ford industry, as we all know, and so that's what education did, was that we set up a high school schedule that was based, or still is in some cases, on 7 or 8 periods, and we then divide those periods into time and motion studies of 42 minutes, and students go through a day, and they take math, English, science, and social studies. And as we move through the day, we hang something on them, supposedly a piece of knowledge, as Henry Ford put the Ford car together. And I guess education has served this country very well. We're the most successful country in the world. We have more Nobel Prize winners than any country in the world. But and also that assembly line kind of education worked very well to assimilate the masses of immigrants coming into this country who speak similar languages and so on, or have similar cultures. But I kid with our staff at times that what we're experiencing now are the ills of our success in education. And we have a much more literate public to work with. And so we're questioned more by parents. Students are much brighter and knowledgeable about the world around them. And so that whole assembly line system that was developed at the turn of the century no longer works as well as it did. And Raymond Callahan described it as education in the cult of efficiency that we're dealing with today. And what we've done is take our high schools off this assembly line And through block scheduling, we have a five-period block, or five blocks, that are divides the school day into 75 minutes. And that's not particularly modeled after other kinds of block schedules that have been described in research. There are 4x4 schedules, which is a four-period or four-block day, and there's 4A and 4B. We developed something that was good for Southern Tigers School District. Well, the end result after the first 9 weeks, even though there was great skepticism by some members of the public and some members of the university, our local university, are in seventh grade, for example, and you must remember that our school organization is that we have in elementary school, grades K through 6, and then our high schools are 7 through 12. So we don't have middle schools to allow for that transition and in growth and change that young people need.
Well, in actuality, much of the research today shows that those middle schools are not working, so maybe perhaps you are ahead of your time. I'd like to interrupt you for a second and remind our audience that you are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m., and today we are with Dr. Ronald Boyanowski, the superintendent of Southern Tioga School District, and we're talking about the redesign and the restructure of the educational system to make a better world for our children and finding out what they're doing in Tioga School District. I'm sorry to interrupt you. You have so many tremendous things that you were doing. Now, you were talking about redesigning using time in different ways, and I think, you know, even 100 years ago when the Carnegie units were developed, they did suggest using time in different ways, but unfortunately, as we always do, we become the extreme in American society, and we adopt one thing, and we take off with it, and so we took off with the 42-minute time allotments, and there we are today, and we know that this chopped up time schedule does not necessarily work for the best learning to take place. What has happened with these 75-minute days? How does that help with the learning process in your estimation in your school? And by the way, I like the fact that you suggested that you did this because it was good for Tioga School District, and what you're saying to us is that you're really a community-based school when you consider the needs of your own students far beyond the standards and everything the state puts out as well.
We in Southern Tioga School District have, for many years, developed models that are complementary to our district. But with this intensified schedule in our high schools, or block scheduling, as it's called in some circles, the results just after 9 weeks, and I was talking about not having middle schools, and but anyway, we had no failures in seventh grade. Our enrollment, our honor roll increased 20%.
I'm sorry, how many?
20%.
Uh-huh.
High school. The principal at Mansfield High School, Trent Boken, who you will be speaking to later, just we put this data together after the first 9 weeks. Has informed me that the discipline referrals have decreased significantly, that parent calls about their children's progress in schools our schools have decreased significantly. And also what I personally observed is a greater calmness among teachers and students. We're not on this assembly line and this fast pace where you only have 42 minutes to communicate whatever subject one might be teaching to students. And students only have 42 minutes to learn it, and if you don't learn it in 42 minutes, then you have a learning problem. And the block schedule within 75 minutes, that teacher can look at the student's needs and approach his learning style or her learning style, and provide several strategies to help students learn. As we know, some students learn through audio means, some through visual, some need to internalize, some need hands-on experiences. Well, within that block of 75 minutes, now the teacher can address all students' learning style and each has equal opportunity to learn. It doesn't mean because you don't learn through the old process of cognition that came about through the theory of stimulus response, through the Binet testing and et cetera, and the psychological era in the 30s, that you can't learn. It would seem to me in just a very short period of time, now we're going to do a five-year study, but the results of this block schedule or intensified schedule in our high schools seems to have a very important impact on the opportunities for our teachers to teach and our students to learn.
Bravo, and I'd love to see that five-year study. By the way, please be careful of moving your face away from the phone. I know it's difficult to sit in front of a phone for an hour, but sometimes you trail off, and we want to make sure we get every single thing that you say because it's really important. Now, in terms of what kinds of things did you do? You started to talk about fiscal management, and we kind of veered off from that. In terms of using, I was thinking one of the things that you talked about, doing schools within schools to decentralize, and we've also heard that school buildings have been used as community buildings with successful school districts who have the same kinds of successes that you're showing in your school district. Is your school building open to the community as well?
Very much so. Our school buildings are the hub of community activity. Not only do we offer educational programming, but it's also, we have nursery schools in community nursery schools in our building. Also have community activity, whether they're athletic or aerobic programs, the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Brownies. We also have a very good, what we feel, a distance learning program. And we belong to the three-state consortium of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, in which we can access several hundred courses from each of our distance learning rooms in our three high schools, or we can access NASA, Space Station, or schools in Australia or whatever that have been very helpful in providing an education to our children. So, and with this, where I'm leading to with those distance learning classrooms, when we expanded our educational facilities, we talked to the public in terms of opportunity for local industry to use those distance learning rooms with the interactive video to train people who work in our local garages, maybe through Ford Corporation or General Motors or however, and that has worked very well.
Now, it seems to me that I have heard a lot, especially in the state of Pennsylvania, that money is a direct relationship to how much money that's spent on children is a direct relationship to the good learning that takes place in school districts. You are a rural school, and I am sure you do not get the kind of funding that, for example, Pittsburgh receives. Is that correct?
We do not receive the funding that Pittsburgh receives, or Philadelphia. A great deal of the funding goes to those schools, but I think the school districts, at least, which might be an impression to some that have an advantage, or some of our suburban, wealthy suburban school districts that have a very good tax base and a very good source to support their schools, and they also receive state funding. For instance, our aid ratio, as it's called, is 0.70, and that's one of the higher in Pennsylvania. But I don't believe that money's the only answer. I truly believe, and we work very, very hard to employ the best teachers that we possibly can for our school district. And if you were to look at our fall newsletter, we employed 20 new people in the district. And among that 20, probably 15 of those graduated summa cum laude or cum laude or were tops in their department in math or whatever. So we look at personalities and teachers. Of course, they need to be compensated so that they can live a resourceful and happy life. But I think we have a sufficient amount of money to operate our basic education programs. The growing need and the growing cost is in special education.
Well, I think what you have explained to us is the fact that we are in a rural school district, as well as, and what we've seen in private schools, is that you use your resources and your community-based schooling. You may not have the most updated equipment or the best of the best, but it sounds to me like you are certainly up there with, as far as technology goes, you're certainly current. And you're doing a wonderful job at what you're doing. And one of the projects that I have is creating a positive impression of what's going on in the schools. I didn't see that. So, in the state of Pennsylvania. And what I wanted to talk to you about now is we're going to be taking a little break soon, so to talk about our sponsors. And I wanted to get back to talking about some of the other kinds of things that you're doing in your school district as far as parent and community involvement, because I think it's really critical the kinds of things that the projects that you are doing and the your impressions of how to restructure the school system that you've been doing in Tioga as a model for other parts of the state and the nation as well. I want to remind our audience, you are listening to Children Come First. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski, WAAT, 750 AM on your radio dial. We're here every Tuesday morning, and this morning we're here with Dr. Ronald Boyanowski from Southern Tioga School District, and we're talking about how to restructure school districts in the state of Pennsylvania and at large, and with respect to Southern Tioga School District and what they have been doing in terms of keeping current with all the latest research and all the latest models that are happening in education. We will be back in a few moments. As soon as we hear a little bit from our sponsors, we're going to take a little break, and we will be returning again with Dr. Boyanowski to talk about school districts in the state of Pennsylvania. Please join us.